Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hello, everyone. It is Free for All Friday, the time here on the Council of Trent where we let our hair down, unbutton our top button, and just get to have a little bit of fun. My name is Trent Horn, Catholic apologist and speaker, and today I want to talk about television. Ah, television. It was what raised me in my younger years. I remember sitting in front of the tube, watching wonderful Saturday morning cartoons. I remember Garfield distinctly. Though what's funny is when you go back and read Garfield comics and other things like that, they're actually not funny at all. You know, I don't get it. In fact, there's a big debate online about whether Garfield is purposely not a funny television show. So growing up as a child, watching television, and then, of course, in my high school and college years, catching up on reruns of other things. My wife always asked me, how do you know all these references? I'll sit with her even last night. We were watching, watching television. Our one thing to unwind, I think I'm allowed in my line of work when it comes to running my brain all day and then running my brain and willpower with two little wonderful children who are slowly approaching faster than the speed of sound. I kid you not, my three-year-old Matthew, he's fast. I'm thinking of putting him in a little toddler race or something. Other people at the park have said to me, my goodness, he's fast for a three-year-old. And I say, yeah, try chasing him around the house. So at the end of the day, we were watching the CNN documentary series. They're doing, I think I told you guys about this earlier, the different decades. It's a pretty good documentary series on Netflix. I do think some of it's, I see the biases coming through in a lot. I think the 70s one was actually really biased in favor of Jimmy Carter, for example. They did everything they could to try to sugarcoat the Jimmy Carter presidency instead of letting the chips fall where they would with how bad it was, frankly, that it's all out of his hands. He inherited stuff that was really bad. It wasn't his fault. And I'm like, come on, CNN, give me a break on this one. So I showed my wife a clip from The Simpsons where they create a Jimmy Carter statue for the town, and the town rebels saying, he's history's greatest monster. And they start egging the thing. And she says, how do you know all of these references? We'll just be sitting around and I'll say, oh, that reminds me of this from The Simpsons or this from this other television show. And I say, well, I forwent a lot of meaningful relationships in high school and college. Maybe you did too by binge watching television or watching as much as I could to catch up with culture around us. And by the way, actually, the CNN documentary series on the 80s, last night we just watched the one on 1980s on Reagan and Gorbachev, is titled Tear Down This Wall. It was actually pretty good. I'm pretty surprised for an organization like CNN, which frankly, in my opinion, I think they have now come to own the bias they've had for many years now. I just think they should just outright just come and say it, the particular bias that they have. But maybe bias in media is a subject for another time. Though on Thursday, I will talk about bias in media related to pro-life issues and the new movie Gosnell that's coming out. That is out right now. But the one on Tear Down This Wall about Reagan and Gorbachev and the fall of the Soviet Union is great and actually has a lot of great scenes showing the work between Pope St. John Paul II and the Catholic Church with the Polish Solidarity Movement, with their goal to establish non-communist unions in Poland, and the work they did amidst violent crackdowns from the beginning of, you know, late 1970s, early 1980s, until the eventual fall of the Berlin Wall in 1989. So that episode, I actually really do enjoy. Some of the others, biased. But back to television clips and references. My wife is amazed. Where do you get all these references? Watch a lot of TV. And if you watch a lot of TV, you've probably noticed, or you remember with some of your favorite television shows growing up, or even television shows now, that there's a moment, there's usually a moment or an event or a part in a season when you realize, you know, the show just isn't what it used to be. It's gone downhill in quality. I'm not really aware. There's very few television shows that you can say, oh, they were good throughout their whole runs. Very, very difficult to find. And I think the reason for that is television, unlike a movie, like when you set out to make a movie, you know, beginning and end, you know what you're making. It's a contained product and you put it out there. And usually what happens with bad movies is they're a sequel to a movie because the studio wants to squeeze the profit juice out of this franchise. And so we have these horrid sequels that come out. I mean, I tried watching Anchorman 2, for example. I couldn't even get through it. I thought, wow, this is such a departure. Or, you know, don't forget, like, and sometimes sequels are great, like Godfather Part Two, Empire Strikes Back improved on their originals, which then immediately is undercut by things like Return of the Jedi, which is, you know, okay, and Godfather Part Three, which is frankly not unwatchable, but it's pretty bad. So that's what happens in movies. You see something similar with television shows, that if you can think about it, as a show progresses on in television, people are trying to figure out, what do we do? They don't a lot of times you make TV shows, you know, they don't have everything planned out from beginning to end. Some shows, I think they might have, because the running gags are so on point. Arrested Development would be one example of that. But a lot of times, television show producers and writers, they're kind of making it up as they go. You saw this a lot with the TV series Lost, that it became so convoluted, and so people had such a hard time understanding it, because they didn't even know what the mystery was, what they were trying to figure out, and they're making it up as they go. So as television shows progress on, season after season, you start running out of ideas, and then the show takes a dramatic drop in quality. And there's a cultural phrase to describe this. It's called jumping the shark. So a show has jumped the shark when there's a particular moment you can tell the show is not what it used to be. And after that moment, there's a decline in quality, often associated with a decline in viewership. The phrase was coined by John Hine's roommate. John Hine is a writer, webmaster. He founded JumpTheShark.com. He used to. He might still. I don't know. He was affiliated with The Howard Stern Show. And he was sitting around with his roommate talking about when shows lose their luster. And I think his roommate said, yeah, like when Fonzie jumped the shark. Now, when I say Fonzie, of course, hopefully you'll recall what I'm referring to. That would be Happy Days. When Happy Days debuted back in the 1970s, the 70s experienced a time of a lot of nostalgia for the 1950s. And so Happy Days was a big hit, you know, following a younger Ron Howard as Richie Cunningham, Tam Bagley as his dad, and, you know, everyone at Al's Diner, and, you know, Potsy, Ralph Mouth, sit on it, Potsy. And when I was a kid, I loved watching reruns of Happy Days. I mean, I didn't quite understand everything that was going on because I was pretty little. Once again, raised by television, being my babysitter, letting me watch shows I probably wasn't supposed to be watching, but it was a good show. And the character most people remember from Happy Days, if they were to kind of go through it, would be Fonzie. So Fonzie was, you know, kind of the leather-clad, he started off the show as kind of a Arthur Fonzarelli, full name, Fonzie, affectionately for short, played by Henry Winkler, who also plays, you know, a funny lawyer on Arrested Development, has been in other series. So Fonzie began as kind of this thug, basically. He was a side character who's not someone that you rooted for. He was just the coolest guy there on the set of Happy Days. He's the guy who could tap on the jukebox and get it to start. You know, there was the big, some of the early seasons, I remember as a kid watching this. I distinctly remember sitting in the living room watching the episode where Fonzie was challenged on his motorcycle to jump over, it was like 13 garbage cans. And then it cuts midway through, like, is he going to make it? To be continued. I'm like, Fonzie, are you going to make it? And what's funny is the censors at the time thought Fonzie represented gang life. They didn't want him to wear his trademark leather jacket. So I think the producers told the censors and the people at the network, well, no, he rides a motorcycle, so it's safety gear. It's not supposed to be threatening or gang-like, anything like that. So where does Happy Days jump the shark? Well, in season five, there is an episode called Hollywood Part 3. So I think season five begins with the Cunninghams going to Los Angeles, and somebody challenges Fonzie to to ride on a water ski, to go on a water ski, and to be pulled and jump over a tank, in an open ocean tank with a shark swimming around in it. And now, here's what's interesting. Henry Winkler was able to water ski, and that was something that he told the Happy Days producers, hey, if you ever need me to do this, I can do this. His dad told him, like, tell him you can water ski. He's like, well, why do I need to tell him that? So they thought it would be a way to show off, hey, Fonzie can water ski and get more attention to the show. But it was that moment for many people, seeing that what was once a relatable show about 50s nostalgia with these very relatable and endearing characters had now become kind of more of a circus atmosphere, where Fonzie and his cool hip antics come to the forefront of the show, and it changed the dynamics of the show after that. Now, some people have argued, and I think persuasively, that was not the moment when Happy Days jumped the shark, because the show went on to have 7 seasons that were very successful. So Jump the Shark is the deterioration in quality. It may or may not correlate with a loss in viewership, because it went on for seven seasons. Really, when you saw with Happy Days, the quality dropped when Ron Howard left the show. And that's really common in television shows when you have a beloved character who leaves, who serves as a linchpin. And one of my biggest Jump the Sharks, I'll talk about at the end of our episode today, that's probably one of the main reasons it happened. That contributes to a decline in the show quality. But it went on for a while. There are other episodes in Happy Days that qualify more as a Jump the Shark moment. One for me that's high up there is an episode later, a few seasons later, called The Shamrock Sandwich, where it's about Chachi and I think Fonzie, and they're singing about their Irish heritage, and it's just awful. And that also talks about the introduction of characters. So a lot of times shows will lose their quality and jump the shark when a established character leaves or when a side character is brought on that is just not very interesting. And that would be Chachi, Fonzie's cousin, played by Scott Baio, who later had a spinoff series with Joni Cunningham, so Richie's younger sister. And that was, if you remember, it was Joni Loves Chachi. And I think I was sitting around with Carl Keating once, and we were at a fundraising dinner at the table. We were joking about different things. And Carl is a very well-read man. He has a lot of extended wide breadth of knowledge. So anytime I can keep up with him in the reference department, I'm always very happy with myself. We were talking about 50s nostalgia and Happy Days, and also things in the 50s people don't forget, like this, obviously the rise of the Soviet Union and the Cold War. And we were talking, we said, well, maybe they should have rebooted Happy Days but set it in the Soviet Union. And he and I both looked at each other and we said, they could have called it Joni Loves Trotsky. Trotsky being one of the famous Leninist reformers. I'm sure some of you are thinking, he's just trying to show people he knows a lot. No, I'm not trying to do that. It was an endearing moment I had with Carl Keating, someone I do miss, who has gone on to enjoy his retirement and was very instrumental, of course, in bringing me. He's the one who brought me on board here to be a staff apologist at Catholic Answers. Let's talk about a few other ways that television shows jump the shark. So I said one, when a main character leaves, if you remember way back the old Dukes of Hazzard, when the Dukes were replaced by new cast members, the show dropped off in quality. Those boys going to be in trouble now. Oh, how are they going to get out of this one? Also, more recently, with the TV show Two and a Half Men. I've seen parts of these episodes, but it's a pretty raunchy show. Not one that I certainly enjoyed watching. But I could tell from other people and just from watching parts of different episodes, the quality dropped a lot when Charlie Sheen, winning, was replaced with Ashton Kutcher. Also, what's funny is that when characters leave, that's when it jumps the shark and loses quality. Other times when a character is brought back, that can be a signal when a show has jumped the shark. A famous example of this would be the 1980s television series Dallas. So some of you got to remember Dallas. Who shot JR? In the Adam Sandler movie, The Wedding Singer, there's a good bit. They say, honey, we need to get out the door. I can't. Something's happening on Dallas with JR. They shot him or something. So that was, of course, a big deal with television dramas and sitcoms of the 1980s, Who Shot JR? Dallas. Later in the series, in the episode Blast from the Past, they brought back a character who was supposed to have died previously, and that was Bobby Ewing, who was played by Patrick Duffin, who was the dad from Step by Step. Step by step, day by day. Fresh start always a different recipe. These theme songs, so those shows like Step by Step was a big one for me on the ABC TGIF lineup. That's where you had Family Matters, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, Boy Meets World. Those were formative shows for me as a younger lad. Step by Step was one about a step family. Patrick Duffy marries Suzanne Summers, who for some reason, because of some kind of dark magic, I assume, always looks to be like 45, and she's been that way for like 40 years. And so the show is about this step family, but then it has other wacky characters like Cody, who lives in the driveway in his van, things like that. So Patrick Duffin from there, was it Patrick Duffy? I might have miswritten it here. But in any case, he was brought back in the episode Dallas. It's a very famous scene, episode of Blast from the Past, that his wife, Pam, wakes up in bed, goes over to the shower, opens it, And there is Bobby Ewing, who was supposed to have been dead. He died last season, saying, "What happened? Oh, it's okay. You just had a bad dream." I think it was season 9 of Dallas. And the entire past season was written off as a dream in order to bring him back onto the show. In writing, this is called retroactive continuity, or what's called retconning. This happens a lot in comic books because comic books get so complicated with so many storylines. You'll see this also in television shows and some movies. For example, in the 2012 movie Avengers, Thor shows up on Earth, to find Loki. But at the end of his movie of Thor, the Bifrost, the only way Thor had to get to Earth was destroyed. So it's like, wait a minute. Thor is supposed to be in Avengers. The Bifrost is destroyed. How's he going to get to Earth? So in Avengers, they have a little throwaway line. Loki says, "I can't imagine how much dark magic Father had to summon to get you here." That's retroactive continuity, retconning, in order to make a mistake in storytelling to try to fix it by later looking back at the mistake and saying, well, this explains it. So a lot of times, though, jumping the shark also occurs when side characters are brought in that serve no useful purpose, really. A few famous examples would be Cousin Oliver. So remember the Brady Bunch? I loved the Brady Bunch as a kid. Cousin Oliver was brought in because they didn't have a young kid, and he just didn't fit in, and that's where the show also started declining. A famous one for side characters that you can look up online is called the Ted McGinley Curse. So Ted McGinley, you might remember him. He was the newer husband who was the neighbor on Married with Children. He was brought on Happy Days, The Love Boat. Poor Ted McGinley, anytime, and Jump the Shark has a whole article on this, whenever he's brought onto a show, whether it's Happy Days, Love Boat, The Practice, shortly thereafter, the show ends up getting canceled or it drops in quality. So he's kind of, there's this Ted McGinley curse that when these side characters are brought in hoping to prop up the show, it just doesn't go really very well. And finally, sometimes jumping the shark happens in shows there, it occurs when the show has drifted so far from its original roots that you liked the show because it had a particular theme, style, and then later on in the series, in order to get viewers, they do things that are kind of wackier or more radical or depart from that traditional style. Two examples pop into my mind. One would be the television sitcom Roseanne. So, of course, if you follow the news recently, Roseanne is dead. The show is on. It's now called The Conners. But because Roseanne tweeted some racist things, she got killed off of her own show and it was renamed. But back when Roseanne previously, when it first premiered on television, it was a groundbreaking comedy because it was groundbreaking sitcom, I should say, because it dealt with more of a blue collar family, not a family that was well off by any means. So it was something that resonated with a lot of viewers. But really, by the last season, the show just completely drifted from those blue-collar roots by having Roseanne win the lottery. And then all kinds of crazy adventures could happen because they do this. And so much so that the series finale is one of the most bizarre in television. There's a few that are really out there. The finale for St. Elsewhere is crazy because it implies that one of the characters, Tommy Westfall, Dr. Westfall's autistic son, Tommy, actually dreamed up the entire series in his head. And if you want to look at real TV nerdy discussion, Google the Tommy Westfall hypothesis. I will leave it at that. So with Roseanne, the series finale's revealed that she had just basically written a novel about all this. She dreamed up the entire series to make up for her grief because her husband had died. John, was he played by Tom Arnold or John Goodman at that point? I think it was Tom Arnold, because John Goodman's on now, but I was not a big Roseanne fan. So completely reworking what the show was about. And that leads me to one of my two big jump the shark moments. They're the two big ones that stand out to me of shows I really enjoyed. Number one, The Simpsons. I loved the original run of The Simpsons up till through season 9. After that, I can't watch it. I find recent Simpson episodes just to be not funny. I mean, it's almost like they're trying too hard or they're like desperately clinging to being a part of mainstream America. And that's not what The Simpsons were. When The Simpsons were created, its first run in the late 80s, early 90s, The Simpsons, they were kind of almost a cynical jab at mainstream popular culture. So much so that George Herbert Walker Bush, you know, said, we want Americans to be more like the Waltons and less like the Simpsons. that this was kind of an anti-sitcom that you could do with only through animation, where you have the father, Homer Simpson, strangling his son, Bart. You can never do that with live actors, for example. And there's so many wonderful, quotable lines, stories, memorable characters in those first 9 seasons. But after that, I just haven't enjoyed it since. And other people agree with me. Many other people online have picked the moment where The Simpsons jumped the shark at season 9, episode 2, The Principal and the Pauper. So this is the description on Wikipedia. In the episode, Seymour Skinner begins to celebrate his 20th anniversary as principal of Springfield Elementary School when a man arrives claiming that Skinner has assumed his identity. Principal Skinner admits that his real name is Armin Tamzarian and that he had thought the true Seymour Skinner, a friend from the Army, had died in the Vietnam War. Armin leaves Springfield but is later persuaded to return as principal. And so this guy shows up and he says, I'm the real Seymour Skinner. This man's an imposter. And Skinner, Principal Skinner says, I'm Armin Tamzarian. He gives Skinner his job at the school as principal. And then he leaves and goes to Capital City. And Skinner reveals that actually, prior to going into the Vietnam War, Skinner was kind of this rebel without a cause, motorcycle type, didn't care about anything. And Tamzarian supposedly saved his life in the war. And so Skinner comes back from the war. Sorry, Tamzarian. Sorry. See, it's confusing. One reason I hate this episode. Tamzarian, who we all thought was Principal Skinner, comes back from the war to see the real Seymour Skinner's mother to tell him that her son has died, but instead just says that he is her son and says, and just kind of goes along with it. And then he's the Seymour Skinner we know today. But it makes no sense to do this. It completely betrays Skinner's backstory, that the reason he was this kind of uptight principal was that he had, you know, mommy issues. It's a great scene. It shows him looking up at his home overlooking the school in an homage to Psycho, the idea that his mom has gotten in his head and, you know, the idea that he was kind of this mama's boy whose overbearing mother turned him into Principal Seymour Skinner. And that's what made him a lovable character. And then Principal and the Pauper comes along and then, oh, never mind. That wasn't his story at all. Doesn't matter. He was really Armin Tamzarian, and he was this rebel without a cause, and he just happened to turn into this character when he comes back from the war for no reason. And then, but by the end of the episode, people realize they like Armin Tamzarian rather than the new Seymour Skinner, so they send the new Seymour Skinner out of town on a railroad car, and a judge says that nobody will ever mention Armin Tamzarian again. And the show basically resets on that storyline. Now, I'm not saying The Simpsons died or anything because of this episode. There's a few good jokes in it. It's not a terrible episode. But it marked a moment, a change in the creative thought on The Simpsons. And it was also around this time when many of the original writers who made the show so good, made it so quotable. You had great storylines like Marge versus the Monorail. It's just got so many great moments in it. Hey, Dad, are there possums in the monorail? Oh, yeah, here they are. I call the big one Bitey. I bet you most of the lines you can quote from The Simpsons are from seasons 1 through 9, if you were able to do that. A lot of the original writers left to go on to, I guess, other careers or bigger careers. For example, Conan O'Brien used to be a writer on The Simpsons, and he brought some of his great zany humor there. So when they left in season 9, the quality went downhill, and now The Simpsons has kind of become a desperate form of mainstream pop culture that it once satirized. So that's sad there, but doesn't take away from how good the original series is. Finally, my last example of jumping the shark would be the TV show The Office. I really enjoy The Office. Season 5 is one of my favorite seasons. I love the Michael Scott Paper Company arc. It's probably one of my favorites in the entire series. And The Office, what was great about it is it helped move television away from the traditional sitcom format. I hate, with a passion, laugh track sitcoms because they undermine your intelligence. If something is funny, I don't need other people laughing to show me that it's funny. Google online, search for Big Bang Theory, no laugh track, or Friends, no laugh track. The shows aren't funny. They're weird and awkward. The laugh tracks are doing the supportive work, and the humor is always very stilted. The humor is very repetitive. It's just build up, punchline, laugh, move on. But when you do multi-camera comedies like Arrested Development or The Office without a laugh track, suddenly you can have humor coming at you from a lot of different directions. In fact, that's why The Simpsons was so revolutionary in its time, because it could set up jokes in a way that didn't rely on the traditional sitcom formula with a laugh track. And The Office did the same thing with these really memorable and zany characters. So where did it jump the shark? I do believe the quality went down a lot when Michael Scott left. After Michael Scott left, after Steve Carell left, I really didn't enjoy watching the series that much after that, because he really was the glue that held the whole thing together. But I don't think that was when it jumped the shark. The tone of the whole series, it really started going downhill for me in season six. Season six, the fourth and fifth episodes, 104th, 105th episodes of the series overall, Niagara. That was the one-hour-long episode where Jim and Pam get married. And the reason that the show jumped the shark was Jim and Pam, while Michael was the glue that held things together, the story arc between Jim and Pam gave us that emotional impact. It really is what drove the series along. The Office was almost canceled after its first season, because it's hard to get into the show. It's a weird show when you're used to watching something like Friends. I didn't understand it at first. It took a while to get into it. And the first season, Michael Scott was a much less lovable character. He was just kind of cruel, and it really kind of aped the British series that it was updating for an American audience. And American audiences just, frankly, don't really like British humor that much. So it was almost canceled, but the love story between Jim, the office worker, and Pam, engaged to Roy, who she is better than, deserves better than, but she doesn't recognize that, or not willing to go for that. Seeing their relationship, that is what pushed the show into season two and onward. And that it was that dynamic that got people hooked. Will they, won't they? What's going to happen with Jim and Pam? And then when they got married in season six, you lost that dynamic. And they actually kind of become somewhat of an unlikable couple sometimes in how they respond to other people. And the show didn't have that great dynamic. This is similar to in the 1980s with the TV series Moonlighting. So if you remember way back in the day, Bruce Willis and Sybil Shepherd, who played Maddie and David on the television show Moonlighting, part sitcom, part mystery show, drama, romance, all kind of cobbled together. When they got together in that series, a lot of people say that's when it lost a lot of its tension. And, you know, that's just what happens with TV shows. We watch TV for that dramatic tension. We don't mind peacefulness and boring peacefulness in our own lives. We want excitement on TV. So that's where I believe that The Office jumped to the shark, though still many great episodes after that. And I hope that you all enjoyed spending a little free-for-all Friday with me. Hope you got your little nostalgia hit. If you disagree with me, I'm happy to hear your thoughts. You can comment, actually, on these episodes at trenthornpodcast.com. But definitely you can go to jumptheshark.net or .com. You search Jump the Shark, you'll find the website. They have got all kinds of shows. See if you agree or disagree. But I hope that this is a fun Friday for you. I enjoy spending time with you. Once again, you want to comment on the show, see if you agree or disagree, go to trenthornpodcast.com. And if you'd like to make a donation to help us, we're very, very close to getting our video element put in place. I know I talked about that a few days ago. Any help there would be greatly appreciated at trenthornpodcast.com to become a subscriber. Thank you, guys, and I hope you all have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit trenthornpodcast.com.